This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Knapp.
Later we go to a protest by Adala, New York, telling Israeli diamond merchant Lev Leviev that financing Israeli settlements has got to go.
Now we explore the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territories occupied since 1967, and will examine the implications for Palestinian statehood by the Israeli settlement building boom in the West Bank.
Palestinians were forced to withdraw from peace talks, and as well the construction of predominantly Jewish housing in East Jerusalem, where the Palestinians hoped to make their future capital. We're joined by Richard Falk, professor of international law emeritus, Princeton University, the special rapporteur on occupied Palestinian territories for the United Nations Human Rights Council.
One of the things I'd like to turn our attention to now is the exponential and aggressive building of the settlements that have ensued since certainly the Obama administration has even dropped its request for a freeze. And I wonder if you can put that in the context of both human rights and the potential for statehood of the Palestinian people. Although, of course, there are some people who would argue that Palestine is indeed already a state, but let's hold that in abeyance for the moment.
Well, I think it's a very important question. And, of course, the real motivations are not disclosed, I suspect. It would seem to me that, at a minimum, it's an effort to box in the Netanyahu government in such a way as to preclude any meaningful negotiations that look toward what is supposed to be the goal of a viable, independent Palestinian state side by side with Israel. The settlement phenomenon has already gone to a point where I think very few people feel that a viable, let alone an independent, Palestinian state could emerge from negotiations, even if there was the will to do so. This accelerated push seems to me to send both an internal message that the settlers will not stand for any kind of peace agreement, and an external message that the two-state solution, as it was conceived back in 1967 in a way, in the famous Security Council Resolution 242, is in effect a dead letter, that there's no way of reversing what the Israelis call facts on the ground.
I do want to really cut to the chase. The exponential building of the West Bank settlement and or settlements that are also, one might as well call them in terms of the building in East Jerusalem. How do you actually characterize this? Is that the correct language to use as we look at what's happening now by the Israelis? Richard Falk?
I feel it no longer is adequate, that one really has to stop talking about the situation as one of occupation and rather face the underlying reality that is dramatized by this accelerated settlement expansion, which is one of creeping de facto annexation of the West Bank and creating a situation that is essentially irreversible and undermines the prospect for a viable and independent Palestinian state, which had been assumed to be the foundation of a peaceful solution.
And while other governments throughout the world are thinking of two have already actually recognized an independent Palestinian state, that's Brazil and Argentina, what is the U.S. policy at this point? Is there a viable policy in place?
Well, it depends how you define viable.
All right.
The U.S. policy is still premised on the coherence of a two-state solution based on direct negotiations between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. And as I have tried to suggest, that seems to me like a diversion from the real situation on the ground, which no longer allows that possibility to emerge. As far as the moves internationally to recognize Palestine as a state and to upgrade its diplomatic representation in Europe and elsewhere, I think this reflects a growing skepticism, even on the part of the Palestinian Authority, that negotiations can lead anywhere. And so this is a diplomatic approach premised on the idea that the recognition of a Palestinian state is not governed by the de facto encroachment by Israel onto the occupied territory, but is based on the 1967 borders. The diplomatic recognition by Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay all explicitly talked about an independent Palestinian state within the 67 borders. That's a significant challenge to what I think Israel is trying to achieve by creating a fait accompli through the settlements and the dispossession of Palestinians in East Jerusalem.
Richard Falk, one of the things that has occurred recently is that there's been a Palestinian diplomatic initiative really to have a declaration of statehood, which has raised the hackle, certainly, of many of U.S. diplomats and the Israeli government as well. And also, you know, there are certainly people who would advocate or say that the only thing that is realistic at this juncture is a one-state solution. And then there's John Quigley, a professor who has written that, in effect, Palestine is already a state. And I know that's an awful lot to bite off, but I wonder, to the best that we can in the time that we have, if you could just, in your own sense, address some of those conceptions and concerns.
Well, those are complicated issues, and it is hard to express a clear view in a couple of sentences, but I would say this, that it's important to distinguish the legal reality, which is, I think, approximated in the Quigley argument that Palestine has the requisites of a state, as that's been generally understood in international law. But that has to be distinguished from the political reality, which is that the United States and Israel hold to the view that a Palestinian state can only emerge out of a negotiated process, that a Palestinian state has to be generated by diplomacy, and that until that happens, the Palestinian territories are occupied by Israel, and that is the formal reality. So you have a confused situation, and then on top of that, you have the Palestinian Authority diplomacy now that is trying to generate international support for the idea politically that Palestine, given the frustrations with the settlement process, given the lack of negotiations, that it can create its own fait accompli by achieving widespread recognition as a state. So you have a new dimension, in a way, of the conflict with the Palestinian Authority, for the first time, I think, taking a kind of initiative that is posing a challenge to Israel.
One of the other things I know you specifically wanted to bring up tonight, as we look at this within the context of human rights and what would be seemingly an aggressive and painful reality posed by Israel against the Palestinian people, and that is the abuse of children who are being held in the West Bank in detention. I wonder if you can explain that to us.
Yes, that is one of the more disturbing recent trends that has come to international attention, partly through a set of British parliamentary hearings, which documented some rather shocking developments that were confirmed by several members of parliament who visited the West Bank recently and visited some of the detention centers there. What appears to be a pattern is that Israelis have been arresting children as young as 7 or 8 in the middle of the night in their homes without any warning and not telling their parents where they're being taken, treating them with considerable violence in the process of bringing them from their homes to the detention center, blindfolding them, beating them, putting them in shackles, and they bring them into the military courts in this way as well, and create a situation that I only have encountered in the past in apartheid South Africa, namely, if the children plead guilty, they get a sentence of, let's say, 2 weeks in jail. But if they plead not guilty, no matter what their argument is, they're put in jail for 3 to 6 months. And so it's a perversion of the law in ways that are very disturbing. And this whole effort to terrorize the children of Palestinians seems to be part of a broader strategy of making life unbearable under occupation so that more and more Palestinians will welcome any opportunity to leave. And this, I think, indirectly is has a relationship to what Israelis worry about, which is the so-called demographic bomb created by a higher Palestinian fertility rate than the Jewish fertility rate. So there are all kinds of factors that seem to be embedded in what is a very disturbing encroachment on minimal human rights.
And we only have about a minute left, but Dr. Falk, if you could just comment, I know that Israel is saying that it's eased restrictions on imports into Gaza. Is that true, and what's the situation in Gaza?
The situation is somewhat confused, as usual. There has been, to some degree, a removal of some of the restrictions on the blockade, but still far less of basic necessities is being allowed to enter through the crossings than the people of Gaza require. So it's less severe. The blockade is less severe than it used to be, but it still is creating a rather unbearable condition of confinement in a crowded area, plus inadequate access to necessary supplies, either for subsistence or to reconstruct the country 2 years after the Operation Cast Lead took place.
I certainly hope that Professor Falk will join us again. And in the meantime, please tell people where they can go to your website, which is full of information that we need to digest in this most critical area of the world, in this most critical situation for the Palestinians. Richard Falk, what is that website?
Yeah, thank you. It's really a blog that I started recently, but it's richardfalk.wordpress.com.
Well, I thank you again for all that you do, all that you write. We will stay close in touch. And again, we've been speaking with Professor Richard Falk.
So don't you buy, Leviathan. Lev builds on stolen land right as we sing. When Palestinians peacefully protest, they face arrest. As we stand here in the cold air, we know Lev's in the wrong. Bong, bong. The life he robs pays for our slime. and white. Watch the truth in this song. So, Lev, as you watch while your stock goes kaput, think of the folks you've hurt. And we'll keep being the thorns in your side till there's justice for Palestinians and you've paid for your crimes.
The heck with chocolate diamonds. They're all the rage now. There's blood on Lev Leviev's diamonds, the profits from which go to financing the expansion of Israeli settlements on Palestinian land. Leviev also continues to support human rights abuses in the diamond industry in Angola.
So international boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement activists against Israel have led a protest against this international merchant of death at Slavoyev's diamond flagship store.
Ah, Leviev, I got that right now. So now we will go with Adala, New York's at Leviev's diamond flagship.
And driven away, so don't you buy Leviev bling. Lev builds on stolen land, right as we sing. When Palestinians peacefully protest, they face arrest. As we stand here in the cold air, we know Lev's in the wrong. He's wrong. Leviev, he robs, hates BR slobs. They can't whitewash the truth in this song. So, Lev, as you watch while your stock goes kaput, think of the folks you've hurt, and we'll keep being the thorns in your side till there's justice for Palestinians and you've paid for your crime.
I want to welcome everybody on behalf of Adala, New York, Boycott Leviev! Adala, New York held its first protest right here in November 2007 at the opening of his flagship store in New York. Few knew about Lev's human rights abuses in Angola and Namibia. Few knew about Lev's building of settlements in Bil'in and Jayus in the occupied West Bank. Few knew about Lev's support for Israeli groups that illegally confiscate Palestinian land. Few knew about his support for the Land Redemption Fund and the Bechara Community Trust that's taking land in Jerusalem. Few knew about the shoddy business practices of Leviev, even here in New York, with his use of non-union labor and his displacement of low- and middle-income families in New York City. We came, we told them, and in the past 3 years, UNICEF and Oxfam and CARE and the British government severed ties with Lev Leviev.
Yeah.
In the past 3 years, major celebrities including Halle Berry and Salma Hayek and Drew Barrymore and others disassociated themselves from Lev Leviev.
Yeah.
3 years and the Dutch, Swedish, Norwegian government pension funds divested from Leviev's company, Africa Israel. And at first, Leviev tried to sidetrack. And then he tried to evade. And then he tried to lie. But we grew stronger. And he could not ignore us any longer. So in November 2010, 3 years since our campaign began, Leviev's company, Africa Israel, announced that is no longer involved and has no plans to build Israeli settlement projects. But we know that Leviev continues to support settlement construction. We know that Leviev's company, Leader Development and Management, continues to build the settlement of Zufim on Jayus's land. We know Leviev has destroyed many lives. We know that we have to stand in support of his victims in Bil'in and Jayus. And so we come here and we sing. I want you to all take your songbooks and turn to page 1.
Oh, the diamonds inside are sparkling, but they can't hide what's behind them. They're floating apart.
no, just say no. In Berlin, all the farmers sigh as Lev takes away their land. But the settlements are a crime, and justice is our demand. As lives are finally showing, and his greed is overflowing, New York knows the way to go.
We are not a quiet movement. We're actually part of a very loud movement. We're part of the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and we're bringing it here to the streets of New York. We're all here to uphold the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions until the three demands are met. An end to the Israeli occupation.
Yes. Yes.
Upholding Palestinian refugees' right of return.
Yes.
Full equality to Palestinian citizens of Israel.
Yes.
And we're not alone in this movement. Right here in New York, we salute Code Pink, Sahava Campaign.
Yes.
And all the great work that Brooklyn for Peace has been doing. We salute Jewish Voices for Peace's campaign against TIA PREF, enough A's, and all the universities and campuses that are adopting it. We salute the creative actions by BDS organizations in St. Louis against Motorola and in Philly targeting Sabra, and the universities around that are trying to get Sabra out of their campuses. We salute the numerous budding BDS campaigns that are popping up everywhere, in the United States, in Europe, in South Africa, in Australia, in Asia. A quick shout out to the Muji campaign. They stopped Muji from building inside Israel, and we salute them for a sweet and efficient, nice campaign. This is a growing global movement, and we're proud to be part of it, and we're proud to make New York a part of it. So in a little bit, we're going to have a nice sketch that's ready from the Adana New York BDS Theatrical Company. We wish you a loss of business and a poor fiscal year.
Gather round, people, for a story that must be told about Tzlavayev's diamonds and the terrible secrets they hold. As we peel off layers of the onion of disguise, and he is feeding us lies. So despite the success when we boycott and divest, if you take off his mask and expose his dark task, you will see his true crime is to steal Palestine.
Boo!
Good news. Lev Leviev has made a public announcement that his company, Africa Israel, is no longer involved in Israeli settlement projects and that it has no plans for future settlement activities.
But peel off a layer of diamonds refined, and here you will find how he is still treating his fellow mankind.
Leviev's company, Leader Management and Development, built and manages the Zufim settlement on the land of Jayus in the West Bank.
Woo!
So despite the success when we boycott and divest, if you take off his mask and expose his dark task, you will see his true crime is to steal Palestine!
Woo!
Good news! Celebrities who once wore Leviev's diamonds will no longer be caught supporting him and have told him to take their famous faces off of his website.
But peel off a layer of diamonds refined, and here you will find how he is still treating his fellow mankind.
Through Leviev's activities in diamond mining, purchasing, and selling, he continues to contribute to severe human rights abuses in Angola.
So despite the success when we boycott and divest, if you take off his mask and expose his dark task, you will see his true crime is to steal Palestine!
Good news, good news. UNICEF and Oxfam have severed all ties with Leviev and will not accept any financial contributions from him
Also, the Norwegian pension fund and other investors have divested from his company due to his illegal settlement activities on Palestinian lands. Yay! But peel off a layer of diamonds refined, and here you will find how he is still treating his fellow mankind.
Levayev has supported settler organizations like the Land Redemption Fund, which coordinate the takeover of Palestinian land in key areas earmarked for the expansion of settlements in the West Bank.
So despite the success, when we boycott and divest, if you take off his mask and expose his dark past, you will see his true crime is to steal Palestine!
So now you can see the Grinch before thee. With facts such as these, you cannot disagree. Levayev is no Santa indeed, but a man who profits while others bleed. But we must believe that Lev's small heart can grow, making him realize that, yo, life does not consist of stealing and selling in a store, that life perhaps means a little bit more. Lev and compassion seems like a long shot, but maybe, just maybe, no only, with boycott!
You're a shanda, Diamond Lev. That's Yiddish for a shame. Diamond Lev, bit by bit with our boycott campaign, we'll pry everything you've stolen from your predatory claws.
Alright, boycott Levayev Jewelry Store.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.